You rely on this podcast to stay informed and connected with your local community, and we rely on you. Without listener support, this show simply wouldn't exist. Be a part of the team that makes this show possible by donating to our home, KUOW. It only takes a minute. Donate at KUOW.org or follow the link in the show notes. And thank you.
Hi, I'm Libby Denkman, and you're listening to Soundside on KUOW. Our connections to books can be deeply personal. We cling to the characters that feel like friends or reflect pieces of ourselves. That can be especially true when we read a memoir and take comfort in knowing that there is someone out there who has lived experiences parallel to our own. But how do you translate your reading experience and the connections you feel with a book into music? Earlier this month, a group of local musicians did just that. They turned their reading experience with Michelle Zauner's 2021 memoir, Crying in H Mart, into original music for the Bushwick Book Club, a nonprofit dedicated to increasing awareness in literature and songwriting. They performed their songs at Town Hall Seattle. You'll get to hear some of those songs in just a minute, but first, the author herself. Here's Michelle Zauner speaking with KUOW last year. She began by reading an excerpt from her book, Crying in H Mart.
Ever since my mom died, I cry in H Mart. H Mart is a supermarket chain that specializes in Asian food. The H stands for Hanarim, a Korean phrase that roughly translates to one armful of groceries. H Mart is where parachute kids flock to find the brand of instant noodles that reminds them of home. It's where Korean families buy rice cakes to make tteokguk, the beef and rice cake soup that brings in the new year. It's the only place where you can find a giant vat of peeled garlic, because it's the only place that truly understands how much garlic you'll need for the kind of food your people eat. H Mart is freedom from the single aisle ethnic section in regular grocery stores. They don't prop goya beans next to bottles of sriracha here. Instead, you'll likely find me crying by the banchan refrigerators, remembering the taste of my mom's soy sauce eggs and cold radish soup, or in the freezer section, holding a stack of dumpling skins, thinking of all the hours that mom and I spent at the kitchen table, folding minced pork and chives into the thin dough, sobbing near the dry goods, asking myself, am I even Korean anymore if there's no one left to call and ask which brand of seaweed we used to buy? Growing up in America with a Caucasian father and a Korean mother, I relied on my mom for access to our Korean heritage. While she never actually taught me how to cook, Korean people tend to disavow measurements and supply only cryptic instructions along the lines of, add sesame oil until it tastes like mom's. She did raise me with a distinctly Korean appetite. This meant a reverence for good food and a predisposition to emotional eating. We were particular about everything. Kimchi had to be perfectly sour, samgyeopsal perfectly crisped. Stews had to be piping hot or they may as well have been inedible. The concept of prepping meals for the week was a ludicrous affront to our lifestyle. We chased our cravings daily. If we wanted the kimchi stew for 3 weeks straight, we relished it until a new craving emerged. We ate in accordance with the seasons and the holidays. When spring arrived and the weather turned, we'd bring our camp stove outdoors and fry up strips of fresh pork belly on the deck. On my birthday, we ate miyeokguk, a hearty seaweed soup full of nutrients that women are encouraged to eat postpartum and that Koreans traditionally eat on their birthdays to celebrate their mothers. Food was how my mother expressed her love. No matter how critical or cruel she could seem, constantly pushing me to meet her intractable expectations, I could always feel her affection radiating from the lunches she packed and the meals she prepared for me just the way I liked them. I can hardly speak Korean, but in H Mart, it feels like I'm fluent. I fondle the produce and say the words aloud. Chame melon, tanmuji. I fill my shopping cart with every snack that has glossy packaging decorated with a familiar cartoon. I think about the time mom showed me how to fold the little plastic card that came inside bags of jjalbuk, how to use it as a spoon to shovel caramel puffed rice into my mouth, and how it inevitably fell down my shirt and spread all over the car. I remember the snacks mom told me she ate when she was a kid and how I tried to imagine her at my age. I wanted to like all the things she did, to embody her completely. I think that I was really haunted by the more horrific sights of caretaking and watching a loved one's health deteriorate. And for a great, you know, maybe a year, I really struggled to remember my mom before she was sick, because it was all kind of clouded over with the trauma of illness. And it wasn't until I started going to H Mart regularly that I would see like a can of mackerel. And I would have this memory of my mom making a little pot of soy sauce and sesame oil and mackerel, and remember, you know, what she was wearing, and you know, her eating with little side dishes. Or I would see sweet red bean, and I would be reminded of this time that we ate this Korean shaved ice dessert in the summertime, and the little blue summer dress that she would wear when we were sweating in humid Korea. And so it became this refuge for me to sort of begin to unlock what had been buried by this sort of traumatic experience. And yeah, I mean, I just kept returning there over and over again, because it was really this odd, surprising type of therapy that was really helping me through this difficult time.
You're listening right now to music by Josh Howe with Leanna Keith, and their song is called Mongchi. It was inspired by crying in H Mart. At its core, crying in H Mart is about grief. It's about the ways we fight to hold on to the memories of those we've lost, while simultaneously grappling with our complex, imperfect relationships with our loved ones. I finished reading the book last night, and it really broke me down in the best sense. Reading Michelle's description of her mother's fight with cancer and the journey through at-home hospice, it felt like loosening a painful knot in my chest, because I've been there. I lost my mom in 2019 after a long, awful illness, and I didn't know I needed this memoir until I found myself crying while reading Crying in H Mart. Art producer Noelle Gasca spoke to Seattle Bushwick Book Club musicians about the moments in Michelle's book that they connected with and how those moments showed up in their songs. You're going to hear the voices of Josh Howe, Jed Crisologo, Emily Persia, Amanda Winterhalter, Drea Marilyn, Nick Masankai, and Cheryl Weiser, along with their compositions.
The big parts of it that stuck out to me, I guess, were the parts where she was trying to learn how to cook Korean food and then also struggle with speaking Korean, especially with her relatives, and connecting to heritage that should be hers and that she fought to claim. Probably because that's where it overlaps with my story as an Asian American. Did was I wanted to capture the feeling of being cut off from your heritage and being frustrated, and there's like a deep sense of loss, because it should be yours, but then it also kind of never was, but it also always was at the same time, if that makes sense. The next section that I wanted to capture was the yearning and the searching for something. She knew that there was all these dishes that she wanted to make, and she was trying and she was looking for it, but maybe she hadn't found it yet. And then the last section is, hopefully it sounds happier, is finally finding that thing, that piece or that resource that's going to allow you to connect more deeply with your culture, heritage, and how just connected it feels. And so it's a good feeling.
I kind of kept notes of lines that would hit me every once in a while, and there was this kind of thing that Michelle's mom would say throughout the book that was, save your tears for when your mother dies. That kind of just subconsciously became the device I used to frame what the song was gonna end up being about.
You can trace it on the walls, you can see it in your face, you can feel it way down deep inside your bones. It's the way you hold your hands, it's the way you learn to dance. It's the voice you hear when you're crying all alone.
It's really about all the small things that are part of the people who are in the deepest relationships with you, and how those add up to being as a person, and how those small things end up being what you miss about someone.
The kind that never leaves you when it's gone.
The concept of identity and where we draw our identity from was really interesting to me from the book that I felt like I wanted to write about.
brave when you cut off your hair and say no more.
There's, you know, these moments throughout our lives that are like pivotal moments, whether we know it or not, that mark like a significant before and after. And oftentimes we know those moments are coming, like Michelle, you know, knew her mom was about to pass away and knew like, I am currently in this before and there's an after coming and I am scared of that after.
Try to live in between, 'cause you can see what happens next, but you know this moment, you just have this moment.
My grandma passed away in October, and I think I've also been relating this a lot to just like my mom's grief processing with my grandma passing away, and just, yeah, that idea of like after someone we love passes on, how it's just, there's no chance to ask any more questions, there's no more stories, and so that part really resonated with me.
And let your anger spark a new faith in you. Stay still.
I think that reading Michelle's story about her relationship with her mom made me reflect a lot on my relationship with my mom.
In this one, you're standing at the edge of a field and you're holding me up in your arms. We've got a smile in the key of 1989.
That dynamic is always kind of changing, or like our proximity or sense of like closeness or attachment is kind of, there's a little bit of a fluidity to it, I guess.
Look at us matching in the fabric that you found in the bargain bin at the store. Look at the camera.
I remember her saying guttural, the guttural, like yelling and the screaming of, you know, mourning. And the two tongues, you know, mourning, and that emotion's universal.
I screamed your name in two tongues. Does it taste the same now that you're gone?
But the constant theme of being a part of two different worlds, like, she's American, but she's also Korean. And like, that's been a theme growing up as well. You know, like, I'm Filipino, but I'm also American. And in some settings, I'm more Filipino. In the other settings, I'm more American. So, but nonetheless, in these two languages, I'm still like calling for you.
Pine on the ground, pine on the lips over time. Will the wounds heal or will I still miss? I'm losing ground in my mind while the world spins ahead. I'm losing time with you now. Will I see you again?
I relate to a lot of it. Obviously, I'm not in the same particular situation, but I am also Asian American and around Michelle Zahner's age, you know, a millennial, a child of parents who are of color in America and in diaspora.
My friends who are like Filipino American and of the diaspora of this generation, who are millennials, we have parents and grandparents who are like, we worked this hard so that you could have a better life and so you have it easier, is the narrative and an almost assumption. But we also have our own difficulties too. So to be in conversation with sometimes conflicting stories of, you have it easier, oh no, we don't. I think that's a deep thing that I relate to with how Michelle Zahner is writing it in her own Asian American experience.
She was so deeply involved with the care of her mother, particularly in those final weeks. And so it's heartbreaking and instructive and illuminating to be reminded of what grief is and the impact of it, and that it's not linear at all. It's not, here's your 3 days, get over it.
Tell me everything before you go, before you go. Tell me everything I need to know before you go.
The story of the relationship, what does it mean? Like, what is this, the relationship between mothers and daughters? And what does it mean to recognize your mother as a person? And what does it mean to recognize how you know her? I think it gave me some language and some perspective on loss, particularly loss that is around loss of the mother, and what is ahead for me. It's definitely a book I'm going to be keeping close in the days ahead.
But in the end, love returns anew. So do you.
That was Josh Howe, Leanna Keith, Jed Crisologo, Emily Persia, Amanda Winterhalter, Drea Marilyn, Nick Masankai, and Cheryl Weiser playing original songs inspired by Crying in H Mart. Special thanks to Jeff Larson, Wes Waddell, and Mo Provencher with the Bushwick Book Club and Town Hall Seattle. You can find out more information about the musicians featured in this story and the Bushwick Book Club at thebushwickbookclubseattle.com.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's Teen Dance Ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.